Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high-potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential.
So welcome, everybody, to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. I'm here with Alan, as ever, and today we're going to do our Marketing 102. So for those of you who listen to Marketing 101, we were essentially, well, Alan was laying out what is marketing, understanding your customer and how you can communicate with them. And today we're going to follow on from that. But before we get into it, Alan, how was your week?
My week was excellent, particularly one interaction I had with an absolutely brilliant guy who was a deep sea diver, and deep sea diving under the North Sea and the Baltic and all over the world became increasingly hacked off in the amount of plastic he was witnessing in the deep ocean. And he's now decided to do something about that, and he did really well. He won an award at Scottish Edge. He's just picked up a huge contract from an online flower retailer. He makes plastic plant pots from ocean plastic waste. But like so many people in the early stages of the startup world, he has been absolutely 150% on it for about the last year. And I got the opportunity to meet up with him the other day, face-to-face for the first time. And, you know, when you get a chance to do that, you get maybe a chance to have some more of the "so how are you" conversation. And he said, "Alan, I'm absolutely exhausted. I feel that I've run a marathon, another marathon, and then another marathon." And that happened to be on exactly the day that we released our podcast on burnout. So how timely was that? Real world issues that real people doing real business find time after time. So we had a great little 5 minutes on what we spoke about. And Ali was away to have a look at listen to our podcast on burnout.
It'd be interesting to get his feedback, actually, because I think the burnout podcast is one, obviously, where we're quite honest about our own experiences, but I think it's one that resonates quite well with a lot of people. So the reaction that we've got just from the posting on social media was pretty big. I think a lot of people, especially with COVID and the amount of work people have been doing and not really getting out, getting that break from work, I think that burnout has pretty much touched a lot of people over the last year or so.
How many people in business have you met that haven't suffered burnout at some point in their life?
The ones who are incredibly rich and never really did anything with the business in the first place. So, I've met a few people like that who basically kind of just are there with the money and they're not really doing any of the work, and they don't understand why everyone else is burnt out because they actually haven't lifted a finger. So
the real world people who are doing real world businesses and are trying to grow something without all the resources they need. Fortunately, everybody gets. And the great news, Ali's off to spend a bit of time in the summer with his wife, with his kids. And my greatest advice to him was, leave the mobile and leave the laptop at home. What's going to happen in your 1 week break that is going to be catastrophic? Nothing will happen.
No, not at all.
You might have a couple of little smelly problems to deal with when you come back, but have your break. Anyway, today we're going to talk a little bit more about marketing.
Yes. So I guess the key now is really around execution. We've established really what is marketing and how you establish who your customer is, understanding your customer, know your customer. And then as I mentioned to you before, you know, we're obviously working with a lot of startups and a lot of entrepreneurs. And one of the key issues that most people are facing or trying to understand is how do you execute, and especially how do you execute on a low budget when you're just starting out and you can't afford to do all of the things, you know, you can't afford to do all the paid searches and Google ads, et cetera, et cetera. how do you go about executing it? So I guess take it from there.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, this is the heart of what many early stage of businesses have, and why when they say to me, or when I ask them the question, what is marketing? They say it's about getting my message out there. Because the reality is, if nobody knows what your business does, nobody can buy it. And if nobody buys what your business does, it will never make any money. And investors, either you as an investor, your team as investors, or external investors, won't back it, because we all want to see evidence of market take-up. I think the other thing just to reassure people on is, try not to be overwhelmed by all the opportunities and all the things you can do about marketing. One of the realities is, as consumers, we are shown thousands of marketing messages and marketing campaigns and advertising campaigns every single day. And as the proliferation of media goes on, there's only more and more and more of them that we're being exposed to. And I was having a chat with a guy I've known for 30-odd years, who's managing director of one of Scotland's biggest media buying agencies, and he's on the senior management team of one of the world's biggest media buying agencies, that's the UK division. And he said, Alan, 15 years ago, I reckon I knew pretty much every opportunity that I could take to a customer to advertise a product, every media channel. He said, now I haven't a clue. It is so many, there are so many that I just can't possibly keep up to. So don't try and think you have to be on top of them all. An absolute key element is doing a few things well, rather than lots of things not so well. And in terms of getting your message out there, really, there's two elements to that. One is your message. What is it you want to say? And that's individual to every business. We can't really cover that off on a podcast like this, other than at the most global, the most high level, which is to say, it needs to touch a nerve. It needs to get through the barriers. It needs to actually be meaningful to your audience. So broad claims and vanilla propositions just don't work, because who cares?
So just to interrupt you on that, there's an interesting podcast I did with another guys from guys called Inside Stories, right? And one of the key things, again, this guy was from, had a marketing background, and his point of view was that oftentimes when companies were coming in to pitch to him for the marketing ideas, the companies wouldn't be able to express who they were, what they were doing very well. So it was the story, and he could quickly understand what they were doing, but they were so very bad at articulating it. And so I guess, you know, what are your tips around building a good story for your audience?
Well, the person you're speaking to there is absolutely spot on. You know, often I'll sit down with a business and say, so tell me what you're doing. 45 minutes later, I'll say, right, so what is it you actually do? Because they'll tell me this great, big, convoluted story. This comes down to, for those that are not aware of him, Simon Sinek does a brilliant podcast. Begin with, or 10 talk it is, begin with why. And again, it comes down to the heart of your business idea. What is it your business does that makes its customer life better? And that should be something that you can articulate in one or at most two sentences. I know it's an old-fashioned thing talking about an elevator pitch, but the elevator pitch is all about distilling that 45 minutes and being able to say it in one or two sentences. The time it takes an elevator to rise from one floor to the other. And the issue in that is, it might be a rational benefit. It might be that we help you process that information in a fifth of the time. It might be another rational benefit around we should do that job for half the price. Or it might be an emotional benefit. We will make your customers enjoy your process more than they've done before. Won't be quicker, won't be cheaper, but they'll like it more. So really, in every business, there's a great technique that I use, which is about, so who cares? So who cares? So who cares? And almost, I remember an old boss I had, which was, there's an element of antagonism required. So the client eventually yells at you, for God's sake, don't you understand what we're doing? Blah! You go, magic. That's what we need. And it's that blah. That ideally single-minded thing that will define what your business's offer is.
Yeah, no, and that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's the clarity of what you're doing, but then it's that resonance with the person who's listening, right?
Which there's another great book called Disciplined Entrepreneurship that talks about in the very early stages of your business, of your idea, take your idea out to 10 prospective customers and don't try and sell them your solution. Just tell them what you do and get their feedback. Mm. And if in doing that, the person you're speaking to says, right, I understand that and I don't want it because, or I do want it because, you've nailed your proposition. You can get it.
Mm.
If they're sitting there saying, but I don't really understand why this would benefit me, you haven't yet nailed down what it is you do for them. Because at the end of the day, every business has to deliver a benefit to its customer. And that's ultimately what this is about. What is it you do? And often, please hear this loud and clear, guys. Often, it's not about the rational element of what you do. So, by the way, you've got Atom CTO and you deliver brilliant technical solutions to your customers. But is that really the code is what you deliver? Maybe it is. But actually, maybe it's how you get to that code that is your real why you can help them. The fact that you make it straightforward, simple, you make the complex easy to work with, and you support them in understanding the issues and challenges, and then helping find solutions for them.
I think you touched on something very interesting here. And I think it's how explicit do you need to be in telling people why what you're doing is a good thing? And the question is, do you need to be explicit about it, or do you need to describe what you do and then have that person infer that it's a good thing for them? Or do you have to say, actually, this is what I do and this is why it's a good thing for you?
There isn't a single answer to that question.
Right.
The moment I go down a route and say, this is how to do it, there will be hundreds of examples of people that have done it a different way.
Yeah.
But this is why actually maybe bringing in somebody either with experience of that market or with experience of marketing or advertising or communication may be helpful. Because once you understand how you're going to do it, and then you can check that does resonate with your audience, then you've got something you can build on. So in that, now I'm a great fan of win my heart, not my head. So work on the emotional benefits rather than the rational benefits. Now, this was put in perfect context by my wife the other day. She said, when she said, thank God I still love you, because if it came down to reason still to be married to you, I've not been able to think of very many rational ones right now. And, you know, I make light of that, but it is true that there are many, many brands that I buy just because I love them. And you know what? There's alternatives. I bet you could equally do the job just as well. But I'm happy. I'm happy with what happened. In fact, there's others that are maybe a bit cheaper or a bit easier to buy, but I just like the one that I have, and I'll keep buying it. And my lifetime value to that business is infinitely more than it would be if I was making a rational decision every time I walked out the door. That said, look at Audi, more spring dirt technique. You know, that's been going on for, well, I was going to say 30 years. It's probably more than 30 years. All built around the fact that they do great technology. But in exactly the same market, BMW is the ultimate driving machine. It's about the joy of driving it. Here's one that's been down a very rational route. The reason we are your best choice is because of our technology. And the other one that goes down the route of, sure, we've got great technology, but the only reason we have that is it makes a great customer experience.
So going back to one of the things you mentioned before, right? So once you've got your story in and people are being bombarded with lots of stories, lots of marketing gumph, as they say, how do you know where to kind of advertise and where to put your message across? Because I think, again, this is one a lot of people struggle with, right? Because everyone tells you, you know, you get as an entrepreneur, as a startup, you get bombarded by people that do your LinkedIn selling. You need, we can help you set up Facebook groups. We can help you set up Google Ads, Google search, organic search. You need to be top on SEO. And I could talk about my experience a little bit later on, but I think from your perspective, what, you know, how do you, when you talk to startups, how do you get them to understand where the people are and how they should communicate?
This goes back to our last podcast on marketing. And it all starts with customers and their requirements. So what you need to do is very simply put yourselves in your customer's shoes and look at the world through their eyes. And look at that sector that you're in through their eyes. Where do they look for information on those products and services? Where are they in the mindset of that being near the top of their priority list? And vice versa. When are they not interested in that stuff? So, you know, what I hear often is, you've got to be on Facebook. Well, I'm really not that interested in service providers for my business interrupting me and my cousin having a chat about his new dog on Facebook as they try and sell me their Zero's latest package offer. I'm only throwing that as an example, so off the top of my head, I don't even do that much in Facebook. But my point being is, when I'm in Facebook, I'm not in the mindset of business. That's my personal social environment. Now, had they done that in LinkedIn, for example? Well, I'm only ever looking at LinkedIn when I've got my business head on. I don't look around LinkedIn for fun, for social things that all my friends are up to. I'm in there for interesting articles and podcasts. So that makes sense. And when you extrapolate that out among all the other media channels that are available, it's not about the channels that you like and you use. It's about where your customers are and what they like to use. And really importantly, when they're in the mindset of needing your solution. So a good example there being, let me try and think of a service that might be about a critical moment in time that one normally isn't interested in until the moment of need. So, you know what? An insolvency practitioner. You know, my business right now is perfectly solvent, and personally, I'm personally solvent. So I'm not sure why an insolvency practitioner would spend a lot of time and effort trying to reach people like me who don't have a need. But come the moment when I need an insolvency practitioner, I suspect the first thing I'm going to do is Google insolvency practitioner Glasgow and look at who comes first. So there's an example of somebody that might say, really? AdWords is really, really important to our communication strategy. Because at that particular moment, that's when we'll find our customer. That's when our customer will be interested in our message. Whereas when it is somebody like Coca-Cola, there's another great example. Coca-Cola's media strategy is omnipresent. It's always there. Because you're never more than an hour away from your next opportunity to, if you choose, drink a Coca-Cola. Which is why the Euros are on the track signboards and at the Olympics. And why, when you walk into your local convenience store, they may well have sponsored the banner above the shop. That's all about, well, we are there where our customers are when they're in the mindset of, I wouldn't mind a drink. And that applies in every business.
So it's interesting, actually, because if I look at the journey for Atom, for many years, we didn't do really any focused marketing. Obviously, you know, you do networking and podcasts and things like that.
Let me just correct your language, old chap.
Ooh.
You did loads of marketing at Atom. You spend loads of time thinking about who your customers are, what their requirements are, about developing and delivering your products and services to meet their requirements. What you might not have done a lot of is advertising your services.
Yes, that's right, actually. So
let's be clear that actually, see, this is where, for me, marketing is the most fundamental part of every business. You know, everything you do should be around that principle of customers and their requirements. How do we identify them, anticipate them, and satisfy them? But what you're talking about there is, maybe, the communication of what you do to your prospective and existing customer.
Yes, and that's exactly it. You're right. I chose the wrong terminology, and it is an important distinction, because we did very little advertising in the very first years. I mean, the podcast was probably the biggest form of advertising that we had. But as time went on, and this time last year, so a year ago, started hiring people to do more advertising work, and we didn't really get many results. It wasn't like we were paying huge amounts of money to do things, but we were testing the waters of lots of different things, and then. At the beginning of this year, I decided, well, it doesn't make sense for us to kind of keep flogging this horse. I mean, yeah, we can try and grow a LinkedIn activity or Twitter followers, but really, I don't think any of them are going on there to find CTO services, right? They're not going on their Twitter feed to look at the great next grant announcement for CTO. They may be, but I think what we decided was, we said, well, okay, after all these years of experience, where do we find the customers that we want? Not necessarily the customers that, you know, not necessarily the whole market, because there's startups everywhere, right? You can look at anybody. You can knock on probably 10 doors out here or down my road and someone's got a startup, right? These two of them will have a startup, right? But where do the people that who can value our services, who will actually understand the benefits of what we're doing and will have the problem that we're trying to solve, right? And so we said, okay, well, actually incubators and accelerators. What we did was, we, instead of doing like a LinkedIn campaign and trying to contact lots of hundreds of people, we took a bit more of a poised attitude, and we said, okay, which ones, let's get in contact with a few of them and tell them what we can offer and start doing some work for them and doing some office hours, and let's see how that balloons. And that was massively effective for us. I mean, the first 2-3 months of deciding to get into the US market, we had 2 incubators that we were working with, right? And that was because we went there. This is, we said, look, we explained what we're doing. They said, oh yeah, our customers, our startups really need this. Started talking to a few of them. And then the feedback was that the startups were working really well with us. And we weren't actually charging anything for any of the work we were doing. It was all free office hours, but it's exposed us to a much longer term relationship with people who value what we're doing and know that once they've got the funding or are actually using us to do small bits and pieces, which we know will lead on to bigger things, which builds what we've always wanted, which are the longer lasting relationships, right? It's the, we don't want just someone to come in and do a small project. We want them to come and work with us over the 3-4 years as they grow and get their funding and start branching out. And I think that was really interesting for us. I kind of had this discussion yesterday, in fact, with a friend of mine. And it was a bit of a light bulb moment, is that, you know, we could have spent huge amounts of money on Google and LinkedIn and really we would have just been frustrated. It's like, why are we, and all we would have been looking at were clicks. Right. We would have been looking at how many people have looked at this, how many people have looked at that. And when we honed it down to like 15 people that we want to go and approach, and we got, let's say, 3 out of the 15, that was much more satisfying, because actually what we realized was that if we got all 15, we would never have been able to deal with them all.
I absolutely love that example of the work that you went through there, because that is about pragmatism in what you're doing. And let me just share a real life story, real world story of an old schoolmate of mine who is probably the most focused and driven business person I've ever come across. And believe me, he did not have it easy. It probably took him 10 years to find himself in a position where he was able to labor and grow. But he was involved in the relatively early stages of e-commerce. He worked as an e-commerce manager in some of the big retail brands in London. But his idea, or the opportunity that he identified, was that this was a burgeoning new world, and there was a huge gap between what the experts knew and what the average e-commerce manager knew. And he had been exposed to some of those real high-level things in the jobs that he'd been in. And he set up a consultancy, basically to consult on improving e-commerce. But his brilliant insight was exactly what you had there. He could have gone on and tried to communicate broadly and have a low hit rate. But his strategy, his big insight was, where do you find people who recognize they've got a problem, know they don't have a solution, but are trying to find the solution? Well, you often find them at conferences and exhibitions. So he built his business basically on finding opportunities to present at those conferences. And as he told me, he said, basically, I go up and do half an hour telling them stuff that they don't know that was interesting and relevant. And then as I walked off the stage, I'd pick out a packet of business cards and I'd stand at the side of the stage after my bit and hand them out to everybody that approached me. Every single one of whom had a requirement that our business could address. And he built up an international consultancy in London, Singapore, Australia, all around the place doing that. By absolutely understanding his customers, his requirement, and finding that perfect media channel to engage them. He got to make a half-hour pitch, uninterrupted, to a bunch of high-quality prospects.
I think, so that's an interesting, I guess what he was doing, what we were doing, is shifting mindsets to be from being a passive person trying to drive people to you in the sense that, you know, I'll spend money and people come to me, to us going, almost like an old-fashioned style, pick up the telephone and start direct calling people, right?
Yeah.
I know that you may need what I'm doing. I want to sell you a Hoover. Let's knock on the door and sell you an Hoover.
Qualifying the audience. Qualifying these people actually have a requirement, and now I'm going to communicate to them. And as we spoke about 15 minutes ago, when you've worked out or validated by a bit, when I say research, don't get hung up on it, it's market research. Go and find 10 of them and go and talk to them. I would say, I'm not here to sell you anything, but you're the kind of customer I think I can help. I want to share with you what it is I plan to do, and I just want your honest feedback for half an hour. And sure, some a-holes might not give you that half an hour, but every one of them I met you at some point needed somebody to help them in their business. Most actually will. And then if you can go in and you can, based on those conversations, craft your pitch to say, now I actually really know what your issues are. I now know how to match that. It's no different, you know, I don't think we've done a session yet on pitching for investment. But, you know, one of the things on that is around go and rehearse your pitch before you make it for real, so you know what the objections are and you can address them. And it's exactly the same for this, because when you know, when you're confident that your offer resonates with that customer, you've got half the bathroom done.
100%.
You know, if you come in and meet me and pitch, oh, look after your IT for 20% less money. And I go, I'm not interested. Are you mad? I can save you money. Yeah, I don't want a cheap job. I want peace of mind. And you haven't given me any peace of mind. The guy I use right now never lets me down. I'd pay 20% more to him than I pay right now just to have his service.
Mm. So you were mentioning before we were when we were chatting about the three rules.
Any times on media channels one should use.
Yeah. So that I think is quite interesting because again, it's one of these things that does come up is that, as we mentioned, people under it want to know how they can reach different people, but obviously a lot of people want to do this free. So what are the kind of things that you?
Well, there you are. This is a really useful tool when it comes to, in fact, every kind of business. But there's three kind of media channels that you can send your message through. Those that you own, those that you earn, and those that you have to pay for. And clearly, businesses that are in the early stage and don't have much financial resource, you don't want to have to pay for too much. And paying for channels might be when you go and buy an advertising campaign on radio or television or on a given website, or you go and sponsor your local football club, or you pay for AdWords, for Google search words, or you pay to boost your post on Facebook, wherever it happens to be. So that's all fine, but they all involve a direct money down to get exposure of what you're doing. The other two are where you don't directly pay for the exposure. So on own, the near platforms or channels that you control. So that includes things like your LinkedIn profile. You know, I post on LinkedIn most weeks in life. I try and say something interesting. I try and say something interesting that's relevant to my proposition about helping businesses unlock blockages that are holding them back. And that, what I know from the analytics, that reaches hundreds of people every week to see that message. Sometimes when I make a boo-boo, like blocking all those people out of that webinar, it reaches thousands of people when I admit to being human and fallible. And you know what? Probably the most effective thing I did was it made me very human. But in things like LinkedIn, there's also your existing customer base and all your past customers. You own that data, and you, for proper commercial reasons, can actually recontact them. It includes your website, it includes organic search that you can generate off that. If you're bricks and mortar, it's the front of your store and your vans. If you have a packaged product, something that is physically bought or exchanged or taken away, it's the packaging that arrives in and the messaging you have on that. These are all owned by you and subject to legal restrictions. You can do whatever you want with them. And I'm not saying that designing a new package doesn't cost money, but you don't have to pay every time people see it. Similarly with your storefront or redeveloping your website, but these are all owned by you and you have absolute control over. So there's owned and paid for, being two very different things. The one that sits in the middle is earned media. And that is where other people transmit, communicate your message without you having to pay for it. They do it for you free of charge. So that includes things like if you post a bit of content on whatever platform, somebody shares it for you to their base, to their contact. That's earned. Because they thought this is sufficiently valuable, I'm going to pass it on. It also includes things like reviews. customer reviews on Google or Trustpilot or whatever platform reviews are relevant to you. It's a bit like my friend Martin, who has built a position where he is now invited to, and conference organizers pay for him to turn up at their conference and deliver a presentation to people who want to buy his bloody product. Genius. So that, and there's lots more about editorial where people will write about you in magazines and websites. But that's the three core areas in there. Owned, where you have absolute control. Earned, where other people will communicate your messages because they believe they're of value for you without payment. And paid for, when you're actually putting your hand in your pocket. And big organizations use all three. Small organizations sometimes can't afford all of them.
But I think that if you combine what we said earlier with, well, obviously in the first podcast of knowing who you're trying to target, with then being able to create a story that's compelling and people understand, and then selectively targeting the people that you know have the problem that you're looking to address, then actually the channels really kind of make themselves, right?
Absolutely.
And then you can direct people to your website or whatever podcast or whatever thing that you're doing that generates that content. I mean, in this day and age, it's not necessarily going to conferences, but it could be doing a YouTube video. Absolutely. Presentations.
Whatever. This is where I wish I could turn around and say, these are the three things you need to do and it'll all be fine. It's not that simple. Every one of them. I use a little visual metaphor in my presentations around marketing or advertising, marketing communications. And that slide is a table full of cakes. And what I say is, every one of these is a cake. Every one of these is a delicious cake. Every one of these does a great job at being a cake. Every one of these makes the people that eat them really happy. Every one is made of different ingredients, but delivers the same outcome.
Mm.
So I can't come in and say the perfect cake is a fruit cake or a vanilla sponge. Or a lemon drizzle cake, or a black forest gâteau. Actually, a lot of it comes down to what ingredients do we have, and what is going to be right for our purpose at that time. So everybody has their own cake.
And on that note, I think we should leave it there. I think I need to go and have some cake now. But yeah, I think that's really useful. I think that's really, really. Eye-opening or illuminating for anyone who's really stuck with how to push forward with their marketing. I think these two podcasts really give a good grounding of where you should go. And actually, I think once you've implemented all of this, it'll all come naturally, right? It should all flow naturally from this, that you'll see the results or not. And if you don't, you change. If you do, continue doing it and replicate.
It's a good solid starting point. And then, this is why there are marketing communication professionals, what I did for 20 odd years. There's always more to build on top, but get those foundations right. Using my last word on the cake analogy, get in the middle of the cake right and worry about the icing later on.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that, Alan. It's been a pleasure talking to you as ever.
And you too. What are you up to this coming week?
This week is more fundraising for the blockchain project that we've got, and actually hopefully concluding a design for a new systems that we're building for another project. So yeah, it's a busy week ahead.
All go in the real world.
All in the real world. Yeah. Lots of work.
Excellent. See you later.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.